Welcome back, friends. Welcome to ArtCast. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, bringing you architecture information from all over the place. And on today's show, we have the post-game chill-out session with Dwayne Taylor from RDA and Mark Fussell from the Wizzy product team and Don Smith of Patterns and Practices, as we kind of chatted about some things after we finished the first web services security webcast on X509 certificates. You know, and these are the kind of chats that we just have, you know, like we're sitting around with people at lunch or at the conference table or something after a meeting, and they're just kind of fun. So I said, hey, let's record some of these. You know, you never know. We might say something really deep or insightful. So you be the judge. Listen up. Hi, this is Ron Jacobs, and welcome to ArtCast, where I'm back again in Studio 2 here in Redmond at Microsoft Studios, joined today by Don Smith, Mark Fussell, and Dwayne Taylor. Okay, so Dwayne, we are going to be talking about, not just Dwayne, all of you guys. We're going to be talking today about some more about Wizzy 3 and some of the lessons learned with security, you know, because we've been hearing a lot about, you know, all kinds of threats, and people get worried about, can I really build business applications that use web services, especially across the internet? Are people doing that kind of thing today? Do you guys know of any cases where they're doing this, or is this mostly on the intranet kind of side?
I've seen it, you know, I deal primarily as a consultant with customers with identity management solutions. That's what I do for, on the security side when I'm not doing architect stuff or managing projects. And I've seen quite a bit of identity management or authentication requirements in some of the more complex scenarios. A lot of the out-of-the-box stuff like AD solves a lot of really good, solid, you know, identity management authentication scenarios. I deal with a lot of the corner cases. A lot of stuff I've done was before Wizzy 3 you know, just in contrast, having to code a lot of the stuff yourself is tremendously difficult. You know, before there were standards like WS Security and things like that, you really had to know what you were doing to, you know, to put the stuff into place and implement it securely. You know, the next stage of that was the specs, but then, you know, unless you're, you know, you know how to read the specs and interpret them into an implementation, you know, you're going to have a hard time. You still have to know what you're doing, basically. It's just now you're going off someone else's design. And, you know, in some ways that's more difficult. And then, you know, the next stage of that was, you know, when the tools started coming out to support the standards, the security standards. And, you know, Wizzy was one of those things I know that made my life a heck of a lot easier for things. I've as of yet to deploy a solution with Wizzy 3 out in the field, but we've used Wizzy 2, and we've done it successfully with X509. And, you know, it allowed me to delegate a lot more of the responsibility of setting this stuff up to people on the team who aren't security experts, and it just allowed me a little more hands-free, you know, just to make sure, you know, everything met the requirements and, you know, let them run with it.
So, Mark, is this a pipe dream or is it reality?
Many, many customers have started to use Wizzy to build real-world systems. This really started with in the Wizzy 2.0 timeframe, which was about a year and a half ago. And in that time frame, we went out and started experiencing customers. So, for example, there was one big communications customer that used had to control a lot of electricity, as it were, on the eastern seaboard. And they used here the flow, how they controlled pipelines to flow oil and electricity. They were a control vendor, and they used Wizzy actually to directly control valves and a whole system of the flow of electricity, and because they wanted to have a web service interface on their whole control system. That was one example of how a customer took a scenario where they wanted to integrate web services in it, and as a result be able to take advantage of open standards.
So were they able to actually control these devices, these valves and whatnot, across the internet?
Yeah. Well, the idea was that they wanted to be able to integrate this with other parts of their systems and by choosing open standards, which is what they allowed them to do. So the big premise around all of web services is that it allows you to integrate disparate systems, heterogeneous systems, around a common set of standards and be able to bring together business processes more easily.
Well, I can imagine, though, for somebody in that kind of position, you've got devices that are all over the countryside. And obviously, you don't want to have to build a private network that allows you to talk to each of those devices. I mean, it would be huge if you could just tap into public networks wherever they existed, right, and then just be able to address those things.
Yeah, and in fact, we have internally within inside Microsoft, there was another company we worked with who integrated Windows Media Center and used that to control all the lighting systems in your house. And they used Wizzy again to put that as a front end on devices such as security systems, lighting control systems, even cat flaps and things. So that from your Windows Media System, they were able to use Wizzy to actually talk to all these devices and control them and basically set up when my lights came on and when my security system was set and things like this. So it was an integration of web services into your home system. So, I mean, those are examples of where Wizzy and devices were built. We also just have a lot of the classic enterprise scenarios. What I mean by this is the business partners talking between each other. I worked with a bank, and what they did was they were actually sort of a middleman. This company was a middleman processing between banks. They basically pushed all the transactions between banks, and they were responsible for ensuring transactions went. And they basically used secure web services to build a business-to-business scenario between two banks. And they used actually certificates in order to ensure that they had security between the banks that they sent the transactions through. So they were like a broker between different banks in order to do transactions between them. I also worked with another company, which was a company called Jack Henry. And what they did was they had just numerous different business processes internally, and they allowed small financial institutions to take advantage of processing. They had to be able to do accounts management and things like this. They wanted to be able to share those processes out with their partners. So you could say, you know, how do I manage all my accounts, and have web services enable you to talk to their account processing piece of code. So they enabled you to be able to develop web services so that they could offload their processing and enabled third parties to be able to build applications around services that they offered.
So, Duane, do you see many of your customers saying, hey, we're really concerned about the security of our web services and we want, the encryption, the signatures. Are they really asking for this?
Well, yeah. I mean, actually, that's how it begins, is they don't necessarily know where to go for a solution, but they say, hey, look, we've got sensitive data here, or, you know, we've got auditing requirements that, you know, we have to have some strong mechanism to attribute transactions to a specific party. We want to be able to go operate in this environment with across these different platforms, and we want single sign-on, and we want this and that. And, so they come with a set of features that they want, and they come with an environment or situation, and they say, okay, what are our options, or what is our best option? And a lot of them that I've dealt with are B2B, very much like the ones that Mark has. There's a lot of them are financial institutions or service providers dealing in commercial real estate and things like that, who do a lot of heavy financial lifting. And they want to make sure that their web services are secure. Again, they need the mechanism there, the auditing mechanism, and the ability to attribute a transaction to a party and things like that. And their environments are typically very diverse. You know, they run across different platforms, or they have to be more locationally transparent. You know, if a web service is operating over here in this network and one's over here in this network, they really can't be... held down or, you know, really impose a lot of restrictions based on where the service is hosted.
Yeah, so, you know, this project that you've worked with Patterns and Practices on, the web services security patterns, it seems to me that, you know, what you guys have essentially done is taken the hard-fought experience that you've gained through a lot of these projects have built up over time and kind of packed it all into a form that, you know, would make even a guy like me could pull it off, okay? So that's pretty good because, you know, really, I mean, you've taken these different architectural patterns and broken them down in very simple ways and you give me kind of step-by-step, here's what you do, and watch out for this, and make sure you take this step and that step, and so I get a good result without a lot of painful trial and error. It seems like you know, when people go, how do you do this? They spend weeks kind of going through all this trial and error. Mark, do you ever see people struggle like that?
Yeah, a lot of the time. There's a lot of struggling there. A lot of the struggling comes in the security space from the fact that security has evolved over a number of years, and you have these sort of different credential mechanisms. You have X509 certificates, which is one example. You have Kerberos as another, and you have all these different choices you have to try and understand. And you have to try and take those choices about how you authenticate people and understand how you're going to secure them and apply them to the system that you want. And then that has variations in itself. You know, is it going to be deployed on the intranet, or is it deployed on the internet? Am I going to have some Windows domain that I'm going to be able to authenticate these users? Do I want single sign-on? And all these decisions are choices that you have to make in the system based upon how security has evolved over a number of years. And what this patterns of practice has done is consolidated them down, you know, to a set of choices that you can see. I know I'm trying to do single sign-on, and I can know I can achieve that if I have a Windows domain. This is the choice I can make. So, you know, a lot of it comes down to pivotal decision points. You know, where are you deploying your application? What type of security? Is it transport level security you want, or message level security? What sort of existing infrastructure affects a lot? I come across a lot of customers who've sometimes bought some third-party piece of security product. There was a bank I worked with in Canada who had this. They had a mechanism whereby when you logged on, it went off to a third-party product that they had, which effectively took your username and authenticated it and handed you back this GUID big long string. And they had to integrate this as part of a web service because they were trying to provide financial reports to their customers who could come in and log on. And so they had to integrate an existing piece of security infrastructure that they had bought. And they were able to do this very easily with Wizzy. And in fact, the custom mechanisms that we talked about today of doing authentication was how they plugged it all in. So a lot of these decision points, and so people have to think of these different pivots of security, you know, deployment, how they're going to secure their messages, who they're talking to, and it all comes down to a lot of trust as well. Do you trust the people who work in your organization? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. A lot of the cases now, people don't. In fact, more and more security attacks are happening internal to an organization than external to an organization. So it's important to secure your web services internally such that, you know, if you have authenticated users, are they actually allowed to go and get this website which can get all of my HR information from my employees? You know, I've got to think about those security decisions. So companies have to think about security internally with their employees as well as externally. And that's just what these patterns and practices do. They enable you to look at your holistic security space that you're working in and try and pick and choose and plug them together using Wizzy as a framework for web services for integrating these different processes together.
You know, when Wizzy first came out, I know there was a lot of people who just wanted to jump on it. You know, just like, oh, there's a new cool thing, and I just want to use it. And there was a lot of people saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, you don't need it. You know, ASP.NET web services are perfectly fine for what you're doing because you're not needing WS security or whatever. So is it still the same situation? Are we saying you shouldn't use Wizzy unless you need what Wizzy provides?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, Wizzy provides security, but typically you need security.
Yeah.
So to develop an application without security considerations is just sort of irresponsible.
But you could do transport level security, you know, like with SSL.
Oh, yes.
With regular web services, right?
Oh, totally true. And in many cases, that's perfectly valid. So if you simply just want transport level security, and in many sort of end user scenarios, I mean, I would take the example of like eBay, you know, as far as they're concerned, they have a million customers and they just want to talk to their one site. And a lot of the cases, SSL is perfectly valid for them. It's particularly, Wizzy becomes particularly relevant and strong inside the enterprise space, I would say. That's where you're trying to do security across machines and you're trying to flow identity to other business processes. That's where it has a lot of its strengths. But, you know, SSL and that sort of level of security is, you know, perfectly valid. You don't have to have Wizzy if that's what you want to do.
Okay. So what I think is kind of interesting, it looks to me from the outside that that some of the things you guys have learned as Wizzy has grown and evolved have helped to shape the security features of Windows Communication Foundation or Indigo.
Oh, yes, totally. But, I mean, you mustn't constrain it too much. I mean, Windows Communication Foundation actually has a richer set. It covers the full spectrum of security from the very simple well, I should say the web-based security where you have REST and you're asking for just SSL and those sort of the paradigm of building that sort of application, all the way up to the richness of SOAP message security and how you integrate into other enterprise technologies. So WCF covers the full spectrum of security in all type of applications. WSI didn't quite have got to that level. I mean, in the sense of there isn't such richness there. But WSI has helped shape a lot of the features inside Windows Communication Foundation. The interesting thing about WSI is it's sort of the way it's evolved was when it was first developed, it was very much a product that was trying to drive the specification space and trying to validate that the specifications like WS Security 1.0, were applicable and they could actually be implemented with some validity and show that they can work. In the WSI 2.0 timeframe, we saw an explosion of people of usage, and it just got used in numerous different enterprises to secure web services because at that point it became more of a mature technology. And in the WSI 3.0 timeframe, the emphasis there was on simplicity of scenarios so you can pick and choose these, which basically aligned with much of the best the practices we've seen here today with patterns and practices, and to help you interoperate with Windows Communication Foundation. I mean, the point I'm trying to get to is that web services are prevalent. They exploded in usage 2-3 years ago now, and security was the number one concern. And WSI as a technology and Windows Communication Foundation helps you build secure web services based on how you deploy your applications.
So, Duane, from your vantage point, kind of outside the firewall of Microsoft, what are you seeing in your early looks at Windows Communication Foundation? What's your early thoughts?
Well, just some specific instances that I've ran across that Mark had alluded to in terms of being a more broad spectrum of coverage and security features. One of the things we talked about with the X509 implementation in WSI was the fact that the certificates had to be exchanged out of band, right? With WCF, you can actually negotiate your security during the communication process. And that's, to me, that's a huge thing because you've got a lot of customers who may have specific requirements that won't allow them to use SSL, for example, but they still need to be able to negotiate using a key exchange on the fly, effectively, during communication at runtime.
Oh, so that sounds pretty useful.
Extremely, yeah.
You have that feature in SSL, effectively. SSL allows you to negotiate a service certificate down to the client. Where what Windows Communication Foundation does, it enables you to do that. It takes it up to the message level, at the SOAP message level, meaning that irrespective of the transport, I don't care if it's HTTP or TCP or SMTP or any other protocol, I can negotiate a certificate down to the client in order to authenticate this messaging. A lot of the work that's happening inside WCF is one set of features is you've moved up features that have occurred in a transport level up to the messaging level so that you become transport agnostic. You know, you're not dependent on a particular transport. And that enables you to build more flexible systems, effectively, and ones that are able to more easily adapt to future changes inside your organization.
So a lot of people are wondering, though, what is the future of WSI? I mean, is there going to be a WSI 4, WSI 5? What do you think?
WSI 4 is called Windows Communication Foundation.
So there's no more WSI after 3?
There's no more WSI after 3, but WSI has served its purpose well. And, well, let's not kill WSI 2 yet, quickly yet.
Yeah.
WSI 3.0 exists today as a product.
Yeah.
What's wonderful about WSI 3.0 is it's a fully supported product with customer services. You know, if you have a problem, you can phone up now today, go to customer support and, you know, the product team, and we'll find out and determine what the issues are. So you have full support from customer services. You know, Windows Communication Foundation, because it's in the Vista timeframe, obviously isn't there yet. So you can't actually use it. So if you're building and deploying something now today, WSI 3.0 is your solution. Now, when you use WSI 3.0, what's so good about this is a lot of the practice and new thinking that you've read and seen today, all about these patterns and practices, all of that's applicable in the Windows Communication Foundation space. And what's more is if you deploy those WSI 3.0 services, we guarantee that those will interoperate with WCF Windows Communication Foundation clients, and vice versa, where WSI clients will be able to talk to new deployed Windows Communication Foundation services. So, you know, WSI 3.0 today is a product that effectively allows you to act as a stepping stone, a roadmap towards Windows Communication Foundation.
So the question I think a lot of people are wondering, though, is, okay, let's say I build my solution with WSI 3 today. When Windows Communication Foundation ships and I say, okay, I want to move it to that, how hard is that going to be? Is it going to be difficult?
So there's both a migration and an interop story.
Yeah.
We expect in many cases that people may have deployed existing applications, which they will just decide are perfectly valid and I can achieve just interoperability with them. If it's migration that you want to change your code, then yes, we're working on a set of best practices and guidance to be able to do that. There won't explicitly be any tool support around it, but effectively it'll be a sort of a best practices in terms of saying, how do I take that WSI policy file and turn that into a configuration file, and what's the mental mapping between the two in terms of like a cookbook in order to achieve that.
But it looks to me like, at least at the code level, if I stuck with, you know, using policy files and, you know, keep my code relatively straightforward using ASP.NET as the host for the services and whatnot, it should be pretty easy to migrate over.
Oh, yes, very much so. Yes, if you stick with ASP.NET and you stick with the policy file, migrating that code over will be a sort of a step-by-step cookbook exercise.
Yeah, okay. So, and I expect that, you know, patterns and practices will be there helping in that process, right? I mean, because we're going to take the same patterns that we've done here for WSI, we're going to repeat with Windows Communication Foundation, right? So maybe next year, about this time, we'll be having a webcast on WCF patterns, right?
Yeah, that's not outlandish at all, because the way that the patterns were written, we have architecture patterns, design patterns, and implementation patterns. The architecture and design patterns won't change, so it's totally understandable that we would just take the implementation patterns that right now focus on WSI 3.0 and do those for Windows Communication Foundation.
Yeah, so I think people are, you know, have come to expect that Patterns of Practice is going to give them guidance and help, and we're totally looking forward to seeing that with WCF as well as with WSI 3, and we look forward to, you know, just great stuff from both of your teams. And Dwayne, maybe, who knows, maybe you'll be involved in that project too. I think that would be terrific. So I just wanted to say, last of all, just thanks to you guys for being here with me on ArtCast today. This has been really useful.
Cool. Our pleasure.
Thanks.
All right.
Thank you.
Dwayne Taylor, Mark Fussell, Don Smith, joining us here today on ArtCast. Isn't that great? You know, just kind of getting to, I love to hear the stories of how people are successfully using web services and WSI and things. Like, I love that one about the, you know, using WSI to control devices in your home. I think that's pretty cool. You know, but this is the great thing about this stuff. It's practical. It's useful. What do you think? Send me a note to ron.jacobs@microsoft.com. I look forward to hearing from you, because you are what it's all about here on ArtCast.